Mr. B.
And here we go. Season three. Welcome to season three of You, Me, and Iced Tea. I'm Deidre Stevenson, and my co-hosts are here with me. And I'm just so happy to always see them, their faces every time. Mr. B, who's, you know, also the host of Free Talk with Mr. B, which is the producer of this podcast. So we're always happy to have him on board. Also the author of The Art of Giving Back, a wonderful book that you should probably pick up a copy of. And then there's Richard D, who's the writer of many, many science fiction and fantasy fiction novels as well. And he's got one there up on his screen. Is that your new one, Richard?
No, that's been out for a little while, but it's been languishing somewhat. So I've got a promotion running at the moment. It's free for the next couple of days. If you look on Amazon, you can get the ebook for absolutely nothing at all.
See, what an opportunity. That's fantastic. A free ebook, you guys. That's just one of the many benefits of watching this show or listening to it on podcast. Once in a while, you get a freebie thrown your way. And then there's Lene Peters, you know, a wonderful editor and an artist and also a writer in her own right. She's got some short stories coming up in our upcoming anthology called Human Horizons. So be on the lookout for that. I've got a couple of stories in there and some other fantastic up-and-coming writers. So we've got a lot to look forward to. And, you know, speaking of writing, today's topic is imposter syndrome. Now, what is imposter syndrome? And that's basically, as far as I understand it, is that you are successfully performing in some capacity, you know, a talent or something that, some sort of specialty, and you are receiving accolades in that regard. You're receiving praise in that regard, and you don't feel somehow that you deserve that simply because maybe you're comparing yourself with internationally famous people who do the same sorts of things that you are doing, and you have a very minor amount of success compared to them. So what do we do when we have imposter syndrome? I mean, as far as I've read before this podcast, this episode, it can actually get in the way of effective writing. I mean, if you are a writer, it can cause you to have writer's block, really bad writer's block. It can cause you to give up on writing altogether, like give up on your dream of writing a book. So, I mean, that's awfully sad. You know, when you think about it, this is a dream that a lot of people have, and they would just give up on it because they get this imposter syndrome. What do you guys think? I mean, anybody want to just jump in and give us a thought on that?
I can jump in really quickly because of this. It's like I've been living with imposter syndrome for a long time. And it's not just in writing, but many aspects of our lives. I think sometimes we feel that we're not worthy. And if we feel we're not worthy of maybe even respect or maybe praise or maybe recognition, then we may think we're not real and no one is going to believe us.
Yes.
When we get those feelings, that's imposter syndrome. We think we're fake. We think we're an imposter and that everyone is going to discover us. And that happens when people go on stage to speak, when they go into work. It happens, like you said, when you sit down to write. Is anyone going to think I'm credible? You know,
yeah.
And so the whole idea is an internalization of self, and it can be fixed, but it's something I live with all the time.
Really?
You know, because one experience recently is I went to the diver training we were talking about earlier. And I would buy all this stuff so I can look the part, right? I don't play it on TV.
And look like the cool diver on the block.
So some parents with a couple of kids were there. They said, oh, we have professionals here today. And they're looking at me. I was like, no, this is my first time and I'm scared to death.
I love it.
but imagine how I looked. And that was the point. It's like, I can start feeling like an imposter just because I rather just look the part. And so just narrowing in on imposter syndrome, it's what we think of ourselves. And we need to work on that.
Absolutely. Richard?
Yeah, it's difficult when you're starting, you love what you do and you hope other people will like it. And you get some good reviews and you get some bad reviews. And that's part of the deal. Obviously, not everyone's going to like what you've written. The trouble is, personally, I take more notice of the bad reviews than I do of the good reviews. And I think it's sort of programmed into us as humans in some sort of way as a reaction to living in a dangerous world, in that we take more notice of things that may possibly harm us than of things that are good for us. And it's until you've got a bit of experience and a bit of validation, if you like, it's always easier to take more notice of the negative. But once you start getting to the point, you know, where you've got quite a bit of positive feedback, then it's easier to ignore the negative. But it's still there. I still look at it, and if someone says something about it, I think, well, they must be right, you know, because they're a reader and that's my audience, and they don't like it. But you have to remember that what you write isn't for everyone, and just because someone doesn't like it, it doesn't mean it isn't any good. It just means they don't like it.
And it's not their cup of tea.
If you can look at it in that way, it's a lot easier to accept the criticism, and it's a lot easier to convince yourself that you aren't an imposter, because most people like it, if you see what I mean.
Right. But you know, here's the thing. One thing I want to ask you too is that because you've written so many books, you've done very well for yourself. I mean, you persevered, you pushed on, and you've written, you know, how many books now?
I've written 21 novels. So,
you haven't let anything stop you. I mean, have you ever gotten close to being stopped? Why?
Yeah. Oh yeah, when I try something new and it doesn't work, and you can tell, it's fairly obvious that it's not working because people don't rush out and buy it. They buy your other stuff, but they don't look at it and think, oh, that's something a bit different from him, we'll try that. They look at it and think, well, it's not what he normally does, so, you know, perhaps it isn't quite as popular. And it's very easy to think, well, I've lost it now. That's it, you know, there's no going back, it's all over. But you have to accept that it's just part of your mind telling you something that may or may not necessarily be true. So the thing is, get back to something you know is popular, get back to something you know people like, and do it.
And
you have to just accept that you're never going to please everyone, really.
True that.
It's very strange with writing, because it's such a solitary occupation. And you're relying on other people. They say you get one review for every 100 books sold. So does that mean the other 99 people didn't like it? Well, you can look at it in an imposter way and think, well, yeah, it probably does. Or you can look at it in a rational way and thinking, well, maybe they're just too busy to write a review, you know?
Exactly. More than likely, that's the case. They actually enjoyed it, but they just couldn't be bothered to spend the few extra minutes that it took to put a review out there, because, you know, they consider themselves super busy, and it was enough that they got through a book.
You have to try and turn the negative into a positive, really, as much as you can, and that will help you overcome it. Sorry, Mr. B, I'm butting in there on you.
No, it's interesting because we use the word somebody likes it, and somebody is singular. So I tend to manage expectations by saying, oh, if one person likes it, I can say somebody liked it.
No, that's right. Well, that's very true. That's the way you have to rephrase it when your mind starts to tell you all this imposter sort of stuff and say, well, you know, he didn't like it, so you're no use. Well, you think, well, yeah, actually someone else did.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've got proof of that. Keep reminding yourself, there's the proof. Somebody who's not my best friend or my, you know, or my friend circle or somebody actually liked it and gave it 5 stars. Some total stranger or so.
That's great. The trouble is, when you publish a book and the first review is negative, then that can be a bit of a downer. But you have to tell yourself, well, maybe the next one will be better, you know?
Lene, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's always puzzled me, because I was aware of imposter syndrome from a very young age I read so many books, I could spell anything in the Oxford Dictionary in school, and that was my nickname. They called me Oxford. And then when you try and write something and someone comes with a negative comment, it hurts. In the age of 10, 11, 12, I was already aware of it. And because I was interested in creative writing and people, you know, hyped up my English essays, and even sent some of them to publishers who came back with great feedback, I was ready to go writing. And then I took a writing class from a very, very old established writer who said, go and live a bit, because you have no life experience to accurately write something, and you're going to embarrass yourself if you reach for something, because you can't write fiction about imaginary stuff without having a bit of experience inputs or the wisdom to actually write it convincingly. But I took it to heart so much that I've lived the other 30 years and I feel I'm finally ready. But this just reminds me of that saying, fake it till you make it, because in a lot of industries, people will just, like Mr. B said, dress the part and swagger into a room. And the awe and expectation of the audience that this is a professional and they know what they're doing. But writers don't have that uniform to rely on, you know. Men can walk around with a Peaky Blinders cap and a pipe, you know, and walk into a room and just generally stand there all broody and mysterious. What do women writers do? I mean, Dame Barbara Cartland used to waltz in with her big jewelry and her fancy pink outfits and dominate a space. But for the rest of us, how do you fake it as a writer? And some of the practical things that I've been doing myself, and I do this through art, because making my own little art pieces that I love, when I see them, I'm back in that mind space of, that was a damn fine little piece of art that I made. It's mine. I did it. I know I did it. No one else can tell me that I'm wrong. We need to make our own little motivational quotes, I think, and put them in your writing space, or set a calendar reminder of, hey, babes, you're the best writer in your block. Remember it. Whatever small or big little motivation you need is, it's another job for us to do as writers, because no one's going to do it for us. No one cares. And the other thing that I want to say is that intelligent people constantly question their sanity, but crazy people never think about it twice. So the fact that we are wondering about our qualifications and worth as writers show that we are perfectly sane, and we can take control of these little niggling doubts that constantly crop up. Because face it, if you get a bad review, is this an annoyed 13-year-old sitting at their keyboard because their mother took away their cell phone? Or is it a 75-year-old who has the same mentality? They never evolved beyond anything of writing themselves, but now they feel that age qualifies them to be judgmental about it. I mean, there's so many demographics at play that we shouldn't allow them the headspace to come and criticize us, because we already have our own little inner critic, and frankly, one is enough.
Yes, true. You know, I can say something there. I mean, there's an element of psychology, you know, here. I mean, you have to kind of look at your own tendencies as well. I mean, my husband is a psychologist. I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I don't pretend to be one, right? But I mean, having lived for decades with one, you do pick up a few things. But and I can tell you this, is that you do have something called parent tapes in your head, sometimes playing, and not just parent tapes, but that one mean teacher has a tape in your head that plays sometimes, or that those mean frenemies, you know, that you spent time with as a young person also has tapes, you know, and sometimes that inner voice might not be you talking. It might be them. So the first question, I think, when you feel imposter syndrome is to ask yourself why. You know, is it a rational idea that I'm having right now? I mean, when I first started to write The Hakima's Tale, for example, it was all during the time of J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter and everything. I was so impressed with Harry Potter, but I thought, gosh, you know, there's this whole world of, you know, magical tales in the Middle East, and, you know, all this tradition of, you know, things like 1001 Arabian Nights, for example, genies and, you know, magic stories and you know, wizards and stuff like that. I mean, why can't I write something like that? Something that could bring that world to a Western audience. Something like what J.K. Rowling did to the British, you know, folklore. and magic and everything. And then there's that voice telling me, oh, who do you think you are to do something like that? You're not J.K. Rowling, you know? Do you really think that's going to happen to you? And I had to literally answer that voice and answer her or him, probably my father talking, and say, you know what? Why not me? She's not smarter than me. She's not more creative than I am. She possibly has better contacts than I do, better connections than I do, but there's nothing wrong with me inherently. You know, I am a good writer. I am creative. I have talent. I can do this, but I didn't want, you know, another thing too, after you do that, you talk to that inner voice, whoever that may be, with your voice, you have to manage your expectations. I think that would be an advice I would give people. You know, I mean, it is true that if you're thinking that you're going to get rich and famous by doing this, you may have to manage that idea, you know, because that does happen to so very few. I mean, every actor and actress that comes to Los Angeles, you know, Hollywood, thinks, you know, that they would love to be a famous Hollywood star in a movie and be discovered and everything, but they don't lose their day job right away, you know. They maintain a way to put food on the table and keep the lights on until that day actually happens, and they pursue it. They keep pursuing the dream. It's sure. Much the same way, I think, with writing. What do you guys think?
And I mean, I'm also agreeing with you. You said something that was triggering my thinking. You know, you covered, and we covered, imposter syndrome from the stakeholder of a writer and from a creator of the covers and the work Lene does, and Richard, all of your books. But there's also the other side of imposter syndrome from the reader's side. And in today's world, we're thinking, are the readers being made to feel comfortable that they're reading a book? Nowadays, we see things on the news where someone wants to burn a book. I was like, what century are we in? You know, and it was like terrible, terrible news. People talk like that. At the same time, let's say you're in a mall and you're reading a book and someone thinks you're posing as an intellectual, you're actually reading a book. When we have phones and technology, you're not an imposter. You're someone who is a naturalist who wants to feel it and who wants to have it in your hand, who literally wants to hold on to these things because it feels so good compared to swiping left and right on a screen. Yeah. And sometimes the imposter syndrome can impact someone because they're being led to think that they're not fitting in as an intellectual or someone who actually reads. And it's like if we're downplaying reading. So my proclamation is just please go ahead and read, read, read. And if we can encourage everyone to read, we can get back a piece of our souls, you know, because everything should not be AI or read to us or fed into our brain, you know, extravenously is wrong. And we can really feel like an imposter if you look too smart outside or anywhere sitting down reading.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's a really excellent point.
There's also a problem in the self-publishing world that new authors can be seduced by people who will sell you a course to make you instantly famous, and this can maybe make you feel like, because you're not instantly famous even though you've done the course and followed all the instructions, that you've somehow failed. And there are so many people that are quite willing to take your money as a naive author with promises of untold fame and riches, that when it doesn't immediately happen for you, it can set the imposter syndrome going in your head. And it's important to be realistic. And I think it's important not to let these people take power over you by trying to convince you that all you need is to give them a couple of $100 and you'll be the world's next best thing.
Yes, exactly. There's no magic pill that you can take, you know, to be a famous writer.
I want to say that you can also be an infamous writer, because unfortunately, through independent publishing and with the AI approaching everything, I'm seeing a lot of authors on various groups complaining that they've published a few books, haven't sold a single thing, and they can't understand what they're doing wrong. In one situation, I'm not going to name the group or the person, someone actually went onto Amazon, found pages from this person's novel and pointed out a bunch of grammar and spelling errors on the first page. The blurb was written in poor English. And the opposite is people who have zero imposter syndrome producing books that are not of sufficient quality to help their reputation in the long run. So if you are feeling that you have the sensation that you don't belong or your work's not good enough, there are various tiers of affordable services, editors, proofreaders, beta readers, developmental editors. Check your grammar, get people's comments and critique, not your family and friends, please. External strangers, right. So that if they criticize you, you are not as deeply hurt by it, but you need to protect yourself so that your imposter syndrome remains the little itty bitty voice on your shoulder that niggles at you instead of a genuine complaint from readers who are calling you out, because face it, we put our soul on the page. It's a part of us. And you would not want to expose that and show it in its worst light. You want to show it in its best light. So manage those feelings as well, because if too many people start saying there is something wrong with your work, it's not imposter syndrome. There might be something wrong with your work. So have that realistic expectation of, I might need to work some more. I might need to research some more. Ego and arrogance are the opposite end of imposter syndrome. And also authors crossing the line when they interact with reviewers who give honest feedback and they make it personal.
Right.
That damages your reputation so much, because readers will tell each other, oh, she really is an imposter or he's an imposter, because they portray themselves as so benevolent and kind on the internet, in their persona and the digital world, and yet this is what they wrote to me. From a reputation management perspective, imposter syndrome can be a useful tool to check an ego so that we don't embarrass ourselves. But when it gets to take over our daily thinking and we can't be productive and write, that's when you need to firmly pull in the reins and take your personality and ego back and just get the words out and deal with the little psychological bits. Schedule half an hour a week to criticize yourself and complain your work really sucks and that's terrible. Have a cry, eat some chocolate, and then keep writing, because we all have different coping methods. But I just want to say, take heart, because every single writer that I've spoken with on one-on-one levels over the years, we all have it. They all have it. And some of them have sold many books, but it's how you overcome it and you know, get the words on paper and worry about the rest later, I think, is the only thing.
And I'll piggyback on that and give you a little more advice, you know, writers out there who, when you get a little bit of writer's block, here's a simple technique. Do free writing for 10 minutes. Just anything, like literally anything and everything that pops inside your brain for 10 minutes. Set a timer, an alarm, you know, and get your keyboard or a piece of paper if you want to go old school, you know, with a pen. You know, I tend to like, I don't know why, I like legal yellow pads with black pens. I don't know if it's the contrast or what, but I love to free write on those. You know, and it just, it's, you know, there's something sensory even about that, you know, and that's another part of it, is choosing your writing environment that makes you feel very comfortable. Just a simple act of mixing up your environment can do wonders. Sometimes you may be in a very distractible environment, you know, and, you know, it may wear down on your will, you know, to keep going. And you may think, oh, crap, I really can't do this. You know, but it may just be that you have so many distractions around you that you can't do it. So get to a coffee shop, or, you know, go sit by a park or something and try it there, you know.
Before we close, the point you told Rich, you were asking Richard about it, if he ever got to the point of quitting. And we may not be able to remove, eradicate, or get rid of the feeling of imposter syndrome, but we can manage it. And maybe manage expectations. And so I know I manage my expectations by going down to an old phrase from grandma: if you can help one person along the way, then your living will not be in vain. And so I don't know why they told us that, but it's benefited me through my life of managing imposter syndrome. I want to reach one of my students. I want to reach one of my readers. I want to reach one of my listeners on a podcast. I set the expectations to one and manage that expectation so that I can always feel like I accomplished my goal. And it doesn't eliminate my imposter syndrome that I deal with personally very heavily, actually. But it makes me keep going because I think there's always one listener on all the statistics.
And always.
Analytics tells me there is always one person out there who wants to hear what I have to say or read what I wrote.
That's true. It's all, that's a very good point. We all have at least one reader.
And my living won't be in vain.
You know, and that's very true. I mean, even if you've got a little following, you know, that just likes your work so much, and they see everything you do, they read everything you write, then you've made a difference. You have made a difference. So, yeah, it is something to feel good about.
And I sure hope, Richard. And Richard, I sure hope it makes you, like me, feel satisfied that one person told you, gosh, I just love that book and I'll take your free book this week. I just love your work. Just one person.
Then it's all worth it if some people pick it up. And it
feels good that one person will tell you, yeah.
It sure does.
Looking forward to the feedback, yeah.
No, I'm a big fan too, so you got one here.
Oh, another one. Actually, you've got three right here. All of us are your fans. Well, you guys, I guess that's all the time we have for episode one of season three of You, Me, and Iced Tea. I have really enjoyed this banter, this back and forth. And we've got a whole bunch more fantastic topics coming up. So don't forget to join us every week around this time. See you next week.
We want to thank everyone for listening. This is Mr. B on Free Talk with Mr. B. For your comments, see us on Facebook. Follow us. Also on Instagram. Follow us. Please send any inquiry to email mrb@freetalkwithmrb.com or go online www.freetalkwithmrb.com. We thank you and look forward to you again when we come on this week, next week, and every Sunday on Free Talk with Mr. B.